There used to be a small YouTube channel called Sam's Online Food Review. It was run by my best friend, Sam Ryder. A channel full of videos that consisted of Sam eating and reviewing food and drink before a camera. His channel garnered around 10,000 subscribers, which, although wasn't huge, it was big enough for Sam to be dedicated to it. I can recall numerous times of sitting in the passenger seat of his car, staying out of his shot, as moments prior he announced he wanted to video himself trying something he picked up in the store, only moving after he signed off with his signature thumbs up or down and his catchphrase, "I like it," or "I loathe it." He was liked for his friendly attitude and happy all-around good guy persona. He was well received by his audience. Rarely were there any hate comments, and when there were, Sam would shrug them off and keep smiling. Sam's online food review went dark 7 months ago. No warning, no notice, just deactivated. I didn't hear or see from Sam despite numerous phone calls and house visits, to no avail. 6 days after his channel was deleted, I called the police to do a welfare check on Sam. I was worried he had fallen ill or hurt himself. The police made entry into his property and found nothing, and Sam was declared a missing person. A week after Sam was declared missing, a dog walker discovered a horrifically mutilated corpse on a railway line. The body had severe lacerations all around the head, arms, chest, and legs, and was almost cut in two across the waist. The decomposing internal organs splayed out of the gruesome V-shaped cut. The autopsy report noted that, although no direct cause of death could be confirmed, it was likely the large slit in the throat that brought on death. The autopsy also turned up questionable findings, including the body missing its stomach and heart. Long strips of flesh removed off the chest, arms, and lower back, and that the body was exsanguinated. The scene wasn't remarkably bloody, yet the body was almost completely drained of blood. 2 weeks later, the police had identified the deceased. Despite the damage that had occurred to the corpse, the teeth were intact enough to get a viable reference for dental records, and my worst fears for Sam were realized. It was him. The police investigated, but could not find forensic evidence of any other person being on the scene. They eventually came to the conclusion that he was hit by a passing freight train, the lacerations and disembowelment attributed to being dragged under, and the missing organs explained away as being eaten by wildlife. A fox, maybe. Sam's mother decided it was best to cremate what remained of her only son. I stood next to her as the coffin was pulled into the large furnace. As the doors closed and the gas jets ignited, she broke down into tears, and so did I. I stood there sobbing for the entire 90 minutes it took for one of the people I grew up with and shared so many memories with was vaporized. I mourned my friend and did my best to move on, and it was going well. I got distracted, I got a new job, I started dating a girl I met through my work. A few months passed, and even though I missed Sam, things were going well, right up to the point when I was browsing Reddit at 3 a.m. that I received a Facebook message from the account of my dead friend. I froze, seeing his profile picture in the messenger bubble. A picture taken during good times, Sam's wide smile plastered on his face. I felt a sudden chill. A profound sense of fear enveloped me. You know, the fear that makes you cold and your limbs ache as the slow drip of adrenaline spreads throughout your body. With dread, I opened the message. It was a link to a file-sharing website. I stared at the seemingly random amalgamation of numbers and letters that made up the URL, my heart racing through what the hell was on the other side of the link, my head racing through what the hell was on the other side of the link, and, more importantly, why did my dead friend send me it? My hand, seemingly on autopilot, brought the cursor above the link, with my gut instinct screaming no. I clicked on the link. Before my finger had lifted from the click, I immediately regretted what I just did. Chrome opened a new tab to the website, The screen was grey, apart from a black rectangle in the middle of the page which had a play button over it. I stared at it, unwilling to click. What I was scared of, I did not know. Around 10 seconds had passed, then the screen refreshed. Instead of the play button, the rectangle had the words auto-playing in 5 seconds in bright white on it. I watched as the numbers counted down, trying to understand what was going on. An abrupt buzzing tone made me jump. The video began to play. The camera was pointed at what appeared to be a grimy white tilted white-tiled surface. I could hear the sound of muffled whimpering followed by footsteps of someone approaching the camera. There was some slight rustling noise as the camera was adjusted. The screen blurred out as the camera was turned. When the camera came back into focus, I let out a choking gasp. In the middle of a white-tiled room, Sam lay on his back on a stainless steel table, his eyes wide in pure, unfiltered terror. The light of a single bulb hanging over the table reflected off the sheen of sweat that coated his forehead, his naked chest rising and falling rapidly in panic. He looked into the camera and attempted to yell, the noise muffled by a tight cloth gag that was bound around his head. His hands were also bound together tightly with duct tape. I stared at the screen, feeling increasingly sick, my brain failing to grasp what was going on. Before I could even comprehend what was happening, the sound of Sam squirming and whimpering was interrupted by a high-pitched, "Welcome to Sam's Online Food Review. Today we have a special treat." The mocking tone came from behind the camera. Sam's panic increased. He started jerking his body, trying to free his hands. The voice continued, "Today we will try what is considered a delicacy in many countries, although usually a forbidden one, that is." The camera zoomed out slightly, and a man appeared in frame, standing in front of Sam. He was dressed in a white coat with a red striped apron on it. He wore a butcher's hat and a cloth face mask. In his rubber-gloved hands, he held a large red-handled butcher's scimitar, and in the other he held a sharpening rod. The man started running the knife up and down the blade in a smooth fashion, the steel on steel making a smooth, shrinking noise. Sam's panicked, muffled yells were growing stronger. The man placed down the sharpening rod and walked around the table. Sam turned his head and started what sounded like desperate pleading with the man. "Poor little lamb," the man cooed. "It won't hurt long, and you'll be delicious." Even from here, I could see that tears filled my friend's eyes. As he struggled, the man rolled Sam onto his front and pulled his head over the edge of the table. The man then walked out of shot and returned with a metal bucket. He placed it on the floor below Sam's head. In a swift motion, he grabbed a tuft of Sam's hair and lifted his head and started slitting his throat. Crimson burst from his neck and splashed over the bucket and onto the floor. My friend's body jerked uncontrollably as blood spewed out of his neck like a volcanic eruption. As I watched this happen, I threw up. I fell out of my chair in horror. I pulled myself away, not able to see anymore. I fell again by the door, the speakers of my computer loud enough to hear what sounded like slicing and grunting. I lay curled up in the corner, sobbing amidst a panic attack, the minutes feeling like hours. When the sound stopped, I shakily got up and walked to my computer. Avoiding the pool of sick on the floor, I forced myself to look at the screen. The page had closed, and Chrome displayed the Reddit screen. The Facebook tab had one notification. I didn't want to click it, but I willed myself to. It was a message from Sam. "I like it." We'd been hiking all day to get to our destination. A quirky little shop in the middle of the woods. We relied on the GPS on our phones more than the non-existent trails that were supposed to guide us. It had a few reviews online, all favorable and bragging about the odds and ends that Marnie's mixtures and medicines for macabre maladies kept in stock. It really was pitched to us as a novelty, a little anomaly of a store deep in the woods near our popular honeymoon destination. Eventually, we found it. It was much larger than I expected a cabin in the woods to be. It was just like the reviews. Big, rough-cut logs forming the walls, huge trees growing right up to the walls, a-twisting and bending around it. We pushed the heavy door with a sign that read, "Open, welcome, open." First, we were greeted by a small gray dog's barking. Then we surveyed the place. Tables covered in glass bottles filled with mysterious colored and non-colored fluids. Shelves of glass jars with metal lids and yellow paper labels taped to them. Small stacking bins filled with stones and crystals. Wire-wrapped stones and crystals hung from a branch, shaped and willed into a necklace display. It was a wonderland of oddities and curiosity. Buried behind a corner made from a cross-section of tree was Marnie. She was peppy and looked young, but had an air of a grandma about her. A big white smile appeared when she spotted us, stretching a strange maroon V-shaped scar that rested across her cheek and lips.
"What's good, kids?"
she called out across the empty shop.
Hi, how are you?"
I answered, my fiancé giving her a little side eye from the unexpected jargon.
"Deadass, I've been for customers all day,"
she said, dripping with cheer. We approached the counter. There was a large space between her with all kinds of planters and old-school lab equipment. Burners, stir plates, small black cauldrons. The dog was sitting on the counter next to her, enjoying a head scratch. She nosed at my fiancé, who petted her back instinctively.
"You looking for anything in particular? Any ailments cramping your style?"
She looked us both over, scratching her chin.
"You look young and healthy."
She stuck her tongue out of the corner of her mouth, furrowing her brow before popping up excitedly.
"Limp dick?"
"No."
"Do you sweater puppies need to be sweater dogs?"
No, we replied in unison. Marnie didn't believe us.
"What drags you out to browse my wares, then?"
she asked, peering over her glasses at us.
"People don't just drag themselves out here for nothing. We just thought it sounded like a fun story to have for our first vacation,"
Jen said, with a shrug of her broad shoulders.
"All right,"
Marnie said with a shrug.
"Suit yourselves. But if you think of something, I am a problem solver."
I browsed the old hinge-lid jars. Dried herbs, spider legs broken down by species, eyes of various animals, which honestly looked more like raisins than anything else at this point. It was almost like someone took every kid's story, TV show, and witch trope for ingredients and shoved them in jars. Jen pursued the liquid-filled bottles. The glass bottles of every shape and size lined the table. The contents varied from thin as smoke to thick as syrup, with every color imaginable filling them and held inside by a cork. Thin sewed cords wrapped around the neck of each bottle and held small paper tags with a few letters scrawled on them. Jen spotted one with her initials and one with mine and decided they would be good souvenirs. She also found a black chest filled with fake bones. In the middle was a little compartment with tea. I helped her get the items on the counter. Marnie looked over our selections and shook her head.
"No, the tea's not for you. It's very rare, and must be sold only to one who can use it." "What about the drinks?"
Jen asked innocently.
"More than drinks, dear,"
Marnie corrected gently.
"My titillating tonics shall ail what fails you."
What do the letters on the bottom mean?" I asked curiously.
"Deadass, I can't even remember,"
she said with a small inflection of disappointment. We shrugged it off and bought them anyway.
"Hey, be careful, yo,"
she called after us.
"Holler at you, girl, for any of your spectral needs."
The rest of our honeymoon was as planned. Lovely sightseeing, food, and plenty of bumping uglies. We shelved our souvenirs from Marie's in the cabinets and forgot about them. Then our anniversary rolled around. Money was tight, as I'd been chronically ill since a few months after our wedding, but we still wanted to celebrate.
"Let's try the tonics," I'd suggested. "Those have been sitting there for like a year,"
Jen scalded, disgusted with the prospect.
"I'll try mine, and if I don't get sick, we can drink them together,"
I suggested. Jen reluctantly agreed. I took a sip from my bottle and returned the bottle to the cabinet.
Over the next few hours, I predictably started to feel different. But the next morning, I realized what it was. My fatigue had started to melt away. The chronic diarrhea and upset stomachs had faded to be almost non-existent. My temperature was almost normal. The next day, I was almost normal.
Jen! I shook her awake. I think there might have been something to those tonics from Marnie.
She wiped the sleep from her eyes.
Are you sure you aren't delirious with food poisoning? No, I feel great. Not even a fever.
She took a gulp of hers and we waited. We weren't sure what ailed her. She was healthy and pretty happy. Then, I noticed my foot had started to fade away. A loud click followed by a soft purr indicated that the engine was on. I raised my gaze and confirmed that we were ready to go. Kissed my girlfriend goodbye and crossed the street towards the bus.
Love you. I'll be back at 4 a.m. Did you make sure you have your keys on you? I don't want you waking up the roommates again.
I shook my jacket so that she could hear the keys tingling and gave her a smile. The engine roared louder, indicating that the driver was getting impatient, and I entered the bus with a hop. I walked straight to the back and stared through the window. I saw her get on her bike and make her way back to Alfara. We drove away from the deserted, dusty parking lot. This was to be our last scheduled practice. We were being driven to a chicken slaughterhouse as part of our food inspection module. The bus was loud with the voices of the other students. We had just come back from a 2-month-long practicing period that veterinary students and my faculty take at external institutions of their preference during their 5th year. We hadn't even seen each other in a long time, and we had a lot to tell.
"Hey, man," said a voice coming from the front of the bus. "I heard you went to that cool aquatic park. Did you get to have close contact with any of the animals?"
The student stood and made his way to the back seat with me.
"Yep, it's the largest oceanarium in Europe," I uttered.
"And no, we didn't get that much contact with them. Most of our work was down in the lab. I did assist with a sea lion surgery, though." The other pupil gave me an approving pat on the back and continued.
"Well, I've become a master of dog neutering, so..."
He made a dramatic pause, and giving me his best Corleone impression, he added,
"I'm gonna make you an offer you can't refuse. I'll spare your dog for free. You'll get tickets for me and my girl, the oceanarium of yours, eh?"
We both laughed, and then proceeded to complain about how unlucky it was that we were going to spend our last practice as veterinary students locked up in a chicken slaughterhouse. On top of that, chickens are to be slaughtered during the night, so that the different meats can be ready to sell the next morning. After a while chatting, my friend decided to go back to his seat to nap it off, and we had a long ride ahead of us. The radio was on, barely perceptible under the sound of the engine. I listened carefully and cringed at the violence of the popularist, nationalist rhetoric that our newest political party was spouting. To my dismay, I noticed some of my fellow students in the front seats nodding approvingly. I searched my pockets, looking for my phone, and unrolled my earphones. Soon enough, my favorite podcast started playing, and I forgot about the radio. I braced myself and proceeded to rest my head against the window. A clicking sound filled my ears. I opened my eyes wide. I had probably fallen asleep. The podcast had finished a long time ago, and everyone else seemed to be asleep. The bus was in silence. I unplugged my headphones and listened carefully. And click. And there it is again. A click. There it is again. Loud and clear. I rubbed my eyes with my fists and looked around, trying to locate the source of the sound. Was there something wrong with the bus? Was it coming from outside? I stared out the window, scanning the dark fields surrounding us. It was pitch black outside, even though the moon was supposed to be full. I assumed it must have been an especially cloudy night. After staring for a while, I started noticing weird, glowing spots. They seemed to hold a soft, nearly imperceptible greenish glow. They were in pairs. Were those eyes? It was louder this time, and spooked the living hell out of me. What was that? A loud zoom echoed, indicating that we had just entered a long tunnel. The lights were placed at long intervals and illuminated. and illuminated the inside of the vehicle intermittently. I saw that the driver was no longer sitting on his place. He was standing curved over one of my sleeping peers. I freaked out.
Get back to the wheel.
I tried to shout.
You're going to get us killed.
But no sound came out. I tried to move, go shake him, take the wheel, anything. But I couldn't move a single muscle. I was pinned to my seat. This time I knew where it was coming from. The bus driver, still hunching over the front seats, contorted violently whilst making that loud clicking sound. He rose with a violent move, standing in a very straight and unnatural position, and turned his head towards me. The bus was left in the dark for a few seconds. I believe I perceived him advancing at an extreme speed, using all his limbs in a spider-like fashion. When the lights of the tunnel made it possible to see again, he was standing directly in front of me. The most disgusting smile I had ever seen splattered across his face. That face, it was all wrong. The mouth impossibly wide, no nose, greenish eyes with no pupils and no irises, and a sickening yellow-orange glow across his skin. The thing rose one of its fingers up to its mouth and made a hush gesture. I saw its mouth bend and project until it looked like a trumpet, rows of needle-like teeth pointing outside. Without breaking its visual contact, it bent over the person right in front of me and stuck that monstrous appendix on his temple, making loud clicking sounds as it fed. Was it laughing? I think that's about when I passed out. Next thing I know, I'm getting down from the bus, visibly in shock. Everyone is acting normal. Apparently, we are already back from the farm. I turned back to look at the bus driver, and he winks at me whilst closing the door. At that point, he looks normal again, but I'm pretty sure of what I've seen. I walked robotically all the way back to my house, visibly confused, and got in bed. The next day, I woke up, still feeling numb from the previous night. At this point, it felt more like a very vivid dream, and I really wasn't going to try and talk about it with anyone. My girlfriend had already left the apartment, and I was thankful for that. I didn't feel like I could talk to her right now. I took a good long shower, walked the dog, ate some breakfast, and turned on the TV. At that moment, I received a notification on my phone. It was from El Pais, our main journal, and talked about the upcoming electoral debate. I stared at my phone in horror. There were very visible marks in the temples of some of the candidates. I stared at the TV, and as the images passed by, I recognized those very same marks in our politicians, football hooligans, religious extremists. I turned off the news. It was too much to bear. I felt sick to my stomach. This was about 2 weeks ago. I've seen the same marks in hundreds of people since. I seem to be the only one noticing them. Some of these people have begun changing, too. Features distorted, orangish skin, glowing eyes. At night, I can still hear the clicking laughs. They get closer and closer. Yesterday, they came all the way to my room. They stopped at the door and just stared at us sleep. My disgust and fear for them has started to become pure hate, and that's how I know sooner or later they're going to get me, too. Tonight, I've decided to put an end to it. That's why I'm writing all of this down. I want you guys to understand why I did it. As I finish writing these words, I can start hearing them clicking down the hallway, but I know they won't get me. There's no more insulin on my pen, and I'm already starting to feel dizzy. I'll be gone by the time they get here.